Get Pucked.
All right, welcome in to the 11th episode of the Get Pucked podcast. That's Matt, that's Vito. You guys know me, I'm Dave. And joining us now, he is the very special guest, actually our first ever guest on this show.
First ever, that's right.
He is the associate editor at The Athletic. He is the host of the Chris Johnson Show. He is the host of Zone Time on Yahoo Sports. He is the host of Hockey Inside Out. He pretty much does everything. A part-time host of TSN 690. He's a former CTV News weatherman. Is there anything he can't do? He is my friend. Welcome, Julian McKenzie.
I feel bad that I'm your first guest. The bar is so low. I'm just thanks so much for having me, guys. It's a pleasure.
Ah, thanks for coming on, man. Couldn't think of a better first guest, to be honest. All right, so we're going to get this started.
Eric Engels is out there.
Julian. Don't get me started on that.
Couldn't think of a better first guest that answered his phone.
Ooh, okay. Shots fired.
Okay, all right. I'm not getting into that. I have no clue what that's about.
No.
All right. So, Julian, you're at the Bell Center quite often. I see you on Instagram. I see you on Twitter. I see you. How is it covering a team that is historically this bad? How is it, joining the beat and getting in there? How is it on from your
It's pretty interesting to cover a team that is literally off to its like worst start in franchise history, and I'm trying my absolute best to not feel like disenchanted or bored or take any of it for granted, because I've always wanted to be in a space where I'm able to cover a team. So getting the opportunity to, and I know I work at an outlet that has Arpin Basu and Marc-Antoine Godin. They're the two guys who are seen as the head guys who cover the Canadians, but I'm able to assist in their coverage. So I consider myself as part of the beat. So it's really cool to be a part of. And the last time I felt like, oh man, like this Canadiens team was bad and I can't wait for the season to be over, it was during the ill-fated 2019-2020 season, and that was like a month before the pandemic started. And when the pandemic wiped away everything, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to take granted of that ever again. So for me personally, like, I mean, there's still some stories that could be found there, obviously looking at the younger players and the prospects and stuff, and just seeing how bad this team can truly be, right? I always think with the Montreal Canadiens in this city, if as long as they're not mediocre and boring, I think people could still find interesting things to take in with this team. But I think we're going to see in the next few games, considering all the guys who are injured, we're going to really see how bad the Montreal Canadiens could really be. It's pretty much a race to the bottom right now. Before the weekend started, I think they were like 3 points up on the Arizona Coyotes. And some people were making the point, well, the only way the Montreal Canadiens could end up below them, the Arizona Coyotes have to win games. But I mean, I think both teams could really lose a lot of games, and Arizona could get caught on a good day. Like, Montreal is like, we're at a point where we're seeing Jesse Ullinen in the lineup. And I know a lot of people have opinions on him, but like, all these young guys are in out of, the fact that there's a lot of walking wounded on this team. So I think we're going to really see how bad this team is in the next few games, just considering how banged up they look.
Julian, do you think that if they had their full roster, do you think they're as bad as they're showing? In your opinion.
Like, I realize now with the way that they looked before all those players got hurt, I don't think they're nearly as bad, but I don't think they're a playoff team. At the beginning of the year, I thought, okay, this is a team that could fight for the playoffs. I'm not convinced that if Carey Price and Shea Weber, even Joel Edmondson, were back on this team, that this would be a bona fide playoff team. I think the teams in front of them right now in the standings would be too good. And it's pretty clear with the way the team is composed, like either the pieces or just the system just doesn't work. The defense is as bad as I've seen in quite some time, not just in their own end, but in terms of their transition play and helping to set up offense. And I thought this team would do well because of the opportunity, because of the wingers they had on their team who are going to be able to put the puck in the net. They can't really do anything if Jeff Petrie can barely get the puck out of his own zone. If Alexander Romanov can't stop making mistakes, right? David Savard, who I think so many games has not looked that great for the Montreal Canadiens. I get that they're not healthy, and I get that they have a shorter layoff than most because of their run to the Stanley Cup final. But the way that this, whatever the system is that Dominique Ducharme is, I find we have not done a great job as media to find a way to explain to everyone what the system Dominique Ducharme has. Because so many people keep asking, like, what's the system? What is it? What is going on? I don't know what it is. Because it, whatever it is, it's not working.
If everyone was healthy,
it wouldn't look good.
Julian, we touched on that on a previous episode, so we kept saying the same thing.
Is it the system or is it the players? Like, let's not dive too deep into the details of trying to figure out those two things. But if you look at it on the surface, obviously we got a bunch of kids that came up from the AHL. They're not the true players that are supposed to be there. This team hasn't really been the true team that Marc Bergevin designed before he left, with Weber and Price and Edmondson and what have you. But at the end of the day, the opening roster, that first game against Toronto, they played well. They came out. There was a lot of gusto there. It's the first game. Everything was great. But then immediately you saw they look lost. It doesn't look like a team that knew what they were doing. So while I think on one hand, yes, we can blame the players, but it, like, you nailed it. The system, there's something there. So is it more system or is it more the players not playing well?
Well, the players are not playing well to that system. But I also, again, I don't know if whatever is in place is working. I thought that the Canadiens should have invested in more mobile guys on the back end, and I think the guys, one other name I didn't even mention on the back end is a guy named Chris Weidman, who they plucked from the KHL. I don't think he's necessarily been that much of a great fit. I mean, offensively he has some attributes, but defensively he's much of a liability. You could tell how Vito just sucked in that air just now. He's caused a lot of consternation, between Canadiens fans. Like, I find the defense has been, a lot of people like to make a point about the centers. I get it. Christian Dvorak's underlying numbers have not been great. Nick Suzuki, he's going through the growing pains of going up against other teams' best players. And they're trying to fill out the rest of the roster, right? Like, Cedric Paquette, a lot of people are not happy about him. But I think the defense is a much more of a sore point for this organization. And I think they're arguably the biggest reason why they're in the hole that they're in right now. I think they're supposed to be able to set up so much more for this team. And the fact that they're not able to do that, like, it hurts their offense. And when the offense does get chances, they're not able to bury them either. They clearly still need a finisher. So it's hard to say it's one or the other for me. It's just a lot of bad between whatever the system is, and it's clear that the players that are there are not good enough for this Montreal Canadiens team for them to actually win games.
So we speak of the players and the system and the coaching. I saw you at Place Bell. We used to bump into each other for Rocket games. I know you cover these young guys. What do you think of the play time, the ice time these guys are getting under Dominique Ducharme? What are your take on that?
I think it's such an interesting and fascinating conversation to have. And I was on, at first I looked at it and I thought, well, yeah, a lot of people see the young players and like, yeah, you know, like, they should be able to get more ice time. This is an opportunity for them to get opportunities on the ice to go up against the other team's best players. And I saw the Dominique Ducharme comment about, oh, why do you want to see Jake Evans get eaten alive by Patrick Kane or whatever? And I was talking about it with Arpin Basu a couple weeks ago, and he made like a really interesting point in that, you know, if you're going to put guys up like Cole Caulfield, for example, who has not been lining it up the way so many people want, you're going to put him up on like a top six, like a top line role. I mean, I know that's happened before, but you're going to try to put him in a position where he gets more ice time than a guy like Brendan Gallagher, who a lot of people know he gives his heart and soul every game to find a way to help this team win, right? Like, the coach is going to have to find a way to go to guys like him and be like, hey, you know, these young guys are going to have to play these minutes. And those guys who are engineered to win, because remember, the way that a lot of those guys are locked into these contracts, for the Montreal Canadiens, at least up until this point, I don't know what Jeff Gorton has told them. They're in this to win it. Like, when they got Mike Hoffman, they got Josh Anderson, they're of the belief that this is also, again, a team coming off a Stanley Cup final run. They're of the belief that they're going into these games to try to win and be a competitive team. Like, the fact that they're going through this is a shell shock to them. They probably did not expect to be this bad. So if you're going to go up and be like, hey, man, you know what? It's game 25 of the season. Jesse Ullinen is going to play more than Tyler Toffoli. Yeah, if you're Dominique Ducharme, good luck trying to sell that to some of those guys. That's one thing. Two, like, we talk about the losing environment and the culture that could be permeating with all the losses going in here. Imagine being like a younger player, like a Ryan Poehling, for example, and Dominique Ducharme's like, all right, cool. You're going to go up against Austin Matthews. We're going to throw you to the Wolves. And it gets eaten alive. Is that what you want? I mean, I get that, you know, you want him to get the experience, but is that what you want? Is that what Canadiens fans want? Do they want them to be in positions where they're going to get easily destroyed by some of the league's best players?
I think Canadiens fans don't want to see Caulfield playing only 9-10 minutes a game, or, you know, Paling only playing 9-10 minutes a game, or being put in certain roles that don't suit their styles, right?
I totally agree with that, but I also think sometimes the lineup can't it kind of hurts. Like Dominic Ducharme, I got to ask him straight up, why did he put Cole Caulfield on the fourth line, I think ahead of the Colorado Avalanche game? And personally, I thought his explanation was pretty sound. He looked at some of the combinations that had worked from previous nights, including one, I think, with Drouin, Paling, and Armia. The Dvorak line, like, I think, was working out a bit too. So he was clearly trying to find lines and combos that worked. And he put together a line with Lekkonen, Suzuki, and Evans, which was going to go up against Nathan MacKinnon. So you need a line that's going to try to neutralize one of the best players in the world. So as a result, a guy like Cole Caulfield is going to get bumped to the fourth line. But what's also notable, too, with Caulfield is that he also got power play time. And in that particular game, I know up until that point, he was getting all this lesser ice time and whatever. Because of the power play opportunities that he got 16 minutes out of it. Jesse Ullinen, I keep bringing this name up, but like he's I know you're going to mention him a little later. I think against the Chicago Blackhawks, or there was one game in the last few games where he got like 7 minutes. But at the one power play opportunity that the Canadiens had, he and like Ryan Poehling, Weidman, I think, was in there too, and a few other young players, Cale Klag was in there too, they got power play time. And if the Canadiens got more special teams minutes, he probably would have gotten more than 7 minutes on the ice. I'm totally with you guys on the fact that, you know what, he should be put in situations in the top six or just with more offensively skilled players. But I kind of also see the other side where Dominic Ducharme probably is thinking, okay, well, I don't necessarily want to throw these guys too much to the wolves, and putting some of their more offensively gifted prospects on the power play at the very least is a good way to add extra time for those players on the ice. I'm not trying to defend Dominic Ducharme. I understand like his record right now does not look good. I'd be very stunned if the Canadiens stood by him next season. But I also think with the way that the prospects are being deployed, it's a little bit more nuanced than as some people think it is.
Well, quickly, something that comes to mind, I'm sure everybody here has seen the movie Moneyball. And one of the scenes in that movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman, he plays the manager of Oakland when they're really going down the dumps. And Billy Beane comes up to him and he says, I got players for you to play them in a certain way. I want you to do this. And he comes back and tells his GM, I'm going to play this team in a way that I can explain to teams next year when I'm looking for a new job. So I keep looking and I keep coming back and thinking about, like, Dom pretty much knows he's likely not going to be back. And he doesn't want to be the guy that's going to deploy youngsters and look even worse potentially than they already are looking. He has his veterans and he's relying heavily on them. And that's just the way he's going to do it until the end, because I believe, and I have nothing against him personally, but this is a man who wants, now that he's got a taste of the big leagues, he wants to stay there. And so he wants to be able next year to at least somewhat be able
but
to go.
But how can it get any worse? Other than just swapping positions between Montreal and Arizona.
My argument is, look at the team now. Look what he's doing. He's relying on veterans, and look how poorly it's going. What harm could it really do? I don't believe putting a youngster against the top lines is necessarily going to derail their career. If anything, it might make them rise to the occasion. It might make them do something greater that they possess that they're otherwise not doing because they're busy being plugs on the fourth line. It's just my two cents about it, but that's how I kind of look at it, seeing what he's doing lately.
He may want to play the veterans, but it's happening organically. Like they're dropping like flies and he's going to be forced to play
the young kids anyways. The next thing to this too, like it's going to get to a point where the Canadiens have no choice but to have, for example, a Cole Caulfield play against Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, for example. I know Marner's on LTIR, but like you get what I mean here. They're at a point where they're so banged up, they're going to have no choice but to call up some of those young players to be put in those situations. And that, I guess, might be their trial by fire. But I just think this whole discussion around the way young players should be deployed for the Montreal Canadiens, I'm realizing now it's a little bit more nuanced than some people think. My opinion on all of this is, if you're going to have the kids up on the team in the Montreal Canadiens, like the big team, play them there. If you're going to have them in the AHL, play them there. I'm not a fan of players being yo-yoed back and forth, and you're trying to see, like, okay, like, is this going to work? I feel like they're handling, like, Cole Caulfield, for example. Like, you ever have, like, a TV remote, and you have, like, remotes in there, you put them in, they're not really working all that well. You, like, take them out, you shake them up, and then you put them back in, thinking they're going to get, like, a little bit more juice. Like, nah, man, at one point you got to realize, you know what? I got to get new batteries, or at least I got to put these rechargeable ones in my charger, let them go all the way back up to green, and then you can put them back in. Like, I think with Cole Caulfield, you're either keeping him in the NHL or you keep him in the AHL and you let him get his goals that way.
We debated.
I don't like the idea.
Yeah, we had debated this, and I was one of those that said, you know what, you send him to Laval now, the damage is done, just keep him there for the rest of the season.
I don't see any harm. I don't see any harm in the Canadiens saying, okay, our main team is not doing well. Put all the prospects in the AHL, let them go on a run, see if the team there can be good, see if they can get a taste of winning some pro games, see if they can help them in the playoffs. Like, I don't know how well the Laval Rocket are doing right now. I know they're kind of up and down and whatever, but, like, if you're in a position where you could put, like, I mean, I don't see any harm in having some of those guys kind of stick down there and kind of get their bearings over there personally, but I'm not, there's a reason why I'm here and not a head coach anywhere.
All right, Julian. So let's look ahead to the Jeff Gordon era in Montreal, right? And before we dive into the new regime and who can fill out those roles, I kind of want to get into Jeff Molson's comments, specifically mentioning diversity and out-of-the-box names, right? And him and Jeff Gordon. So what, Julian, do those words specifically, what do they mean to you, and what do you envision it means in terms of the GM position?
I mean, what diversity means to me, I mean, it could mean a wide array of different things. I guess in the context of hockey, I guess it's just, I guess, difference of opinion and different backgrounds, I guess. And I hear so many more of my colleagues make the point that more and more teams should be looking to get more of these quote unquote out of the box hires, whether it's like a lawyer or an agent, not necessarily tapping into some former player to actually do that. I also wonder if there are other persons of color who also fit those molds as well. And I just thought that the way Jeff Molson was trying to explain diversity when Arpin pressed him on it, I was kind of left wondering, like, okay, I don't know what that means. Like, if you what's your idea of hiring a diverse, what does that mean to you? When you throw out the word diversity, that could mean whatever you want it to be. You could be like, oh, well, we had all these older people before, we're going to get a younger white person. I don't know what that means. And I guess I would have liked a little bit more clarity, but maybe I'm just being nitpicky at this point. I don't know. I think a lot of people also would just kind of settle for just picking the right person for this job, essentially.
God, please, yes.
But who is the best person for this job? I mean, it's kind of funny. We make a lot of people have gone on the debate with bilingualism for the position of GM in Montreal. The ironic thing about it is the best candidate is not on the market. It's Julien Brisebois. Mm-hmm. The best GM in the league is a French-speaking guy, a Francophone guy who was in the organization for the Montreal Canadiens, but he's not going to be available. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if the Canadiens say, you know what, let's see if Mathieu Darche can do it, just because, honestly, it's not even a question of saying, oh, he has all of these qualifications or whatever. My thinking was always just like, oh, what if the Canadiens just think, okay, we can't get Julien Brisebois, let's get the guy next to him from that same organization, right?
See if the wording rubs off on him.
Yeah, right? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
But he's been there for such a short amount of time, right?
And and he hasn't necessarily been a GM either, right? Exactly. Like, Daniel Briere works for an ECHL franchise as their president and also handles some day-to-day matters. That might be a little bit better than whatever experience Mathieu Darche has, albeit at the ECHL level.
Did I see you spoke to Danny Briere recently about I saw him in an article?
I did for another story I was working on about the Canadiens using Fix You for their for their intros. That was funny, cuz like that particular story, not to kind of change the subject a little bit, but like that story, I was kind of like working on it for a bit, and I reached out to Danny Briere, and he gave me a couple minutes of his time, and he was talking about it. And I had that quote in tow, and I think I reached out to Ray Lalonde, who used to be the vice president of marketing with the Canadiens. Well, he's the head guy of marketing for the Canadiens. And I had that like kind of sitting there, And I was thinking, okay, when am I going to get to this story? And then I was at this game and they start playing Fix You. I'm like, okay. I might have to do this story a lot sooner than I think I might have to. And it just so happened, it was against the Predators because Hal Gill happened to be in the building that night. I like ran to the Predators booth in the first intermission and I got some quotes from him too. So yeah, like that's how that story kind of came together. It's just like a lot of fortuitous bounces and some foresight, I guess, but it ended up working out the way that it did. But that was talking to Danny. That was well before I knew anything about him being involved with any. I mean, I don't even know if he is involved in any GM search for the Canadians. But that was well before I heard any. I had heard his name being trotted out as a potential candidate for that job. It just kind of lucked out that way. But I haven't I'm not planning on asking him hey, are you going for the job or anything like that? Like, do you know if you want this or whatever? Like, it's just funny that I was talking to him. It's like, oh, hey, Danny Briere. Wonder if he'll be with the Canadians. That'd be really interesting though.
And now he's in your contact book. So you hit him up if he ever does. He's your source, right? He's your inside man.
I mean, I don't like secret to kiss and tell sources like that. So that'd be cool, I guess, but yeah.
Do you have a name in mind when it comes to general manager? Like you mentioned Danny Briere, Mats Dash. Do you have anyone obviously it's a very subjective thing and we don't know the candidates personally or anything. So do you have someone in mind kind of that's would be your favorite or a front runner?
That's pretty tough. Like I said with Mathieu, I thought for the longest while it would have been Mathieu Darche. I wonder if he's somebody who will end up being that person for the reasons I mentioned earlier because of his affiliation with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I wonder if the Montreal Canadiens will consider doing something completely out of the box and hiring Emily Castonguay as the first female general manager. Like that would be something that would be so out of the box, and it would open the Montreal Canadiens not just to, having the first female GM in their league, but in terms of all the big four sports, Kim Ang in Miami, obviously, that's somebody who is looked at for that. But Emily Castonguay in the NHL, that opens the Montreal Canadiens to so many other different things.
Absolutely.
Julian, have you been listening to Get Puck lately?
Here's what I'll say about Emily Castonguay is that, I've seen people in talking about diversity, a lot of other names have been trotted out, and I've seen people be like, oh, well, what about a woman? How come I haven't heard a female name mentioned as a candidate for that job? And just in talking to other people about it, they were like, oh, well, what about Emily Castonguay as a name, right? I mean, she's French as well. You may know her as the agent for Alexis Lafrenière, the Rangers player. It makes sense, right? I mean, I don't know what her qualifications are with running teams, but she knows a thing or two about dealing with players. I heard the name Kent Hughes a few weeks ago, who apparently also fits the bill. And yeah, I don't know. I think there are some names out there. I'm not really sure who really the front runner should be. I guess it's just what I envision the person will end up being will be someone who doesn't have a wealth of experience at the GM position, because I think they're just going to end up complimenting Jeff Gorton. Essentially, I think Jeff is pretty much going to kind of run the show.
Yes.
And then the GM, I mean, they'll handle phone calls and do trades, but it'll kind of be like what Kyle Dubas is in Toronto. Yes, he ran the Sioux Greyhounds, but I think he's a young guy who's still learning, not learning, but he's a young guy in this business. You know what I'm saying? So I think it'll be something of that same ilk. You're not going to see Brian Burkhalp out of nowhere and end up being the GM, which we get the whole non-bilingual thing, but he understands that in Montreal, if you suck, you can suck in two languages. So he at least understands how tough the market is. So yeah, whoever is doesn't have that much experience, but is able to compliment Jeff Gorton, that is who is going to end up being GM of this team.
Dave, didn't you pick Emily Castonguay last episode?
I did indeed. And I spoke about it a bit again this weekend on the TSN 690, on the weekend game plan. I think she's perfect. I think she fits.
Shout out Matthew. Shout out Matt
Ross.
Matthew Ross. Yes.
Hope he's doing all right.
Matt, who did you pick last episode?
I didn't specifically pick a person, but I spoke first, if you remember, and I did say I think that this would be a premium opportunity for them to make a big splash, not so much to do it for a PR reason, which would obviously be a slam dunk if they go and take a woman, but when Dave mentioned her and he told me about her qualifications because, admittedly, I didn't know too much. I knew that she was Alexis Lafreniere's agent. But when you start talking about her a bit more, it seems to me that if that is somebody that you're going to look at, just objectively speaking, not for any other particularities as in being a woman, I think she might actually be a really solid candidate. So I agreed with it. I think that was who I was going with as well.
I went with Pat Brisson.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how these player agents are being put up there, right? Because I think you're going to hear more and more of those, because one thing with the Montreal Canadiens, as much as their franchise is storied, it seems as if they have a problem with luring in all these great players to come to that team. So I think that's why big reason why you're hearing all these agents' names being mentioned. Kent Hughes, for example, has a whole list of these Francophone players, like a Patrice Bergeron, for example, on his contact list. So everyone's thinking, oh, hey, well, you know, maybe that's a way for them to get these players to come to Montreal. So that's why I think a lot of people like the idea.
I don't know about that one in particular, but yes, that would be
one guy. Smart. One guy who I thought at first could fit, but I also wonder if him being a GM isn't necessarily the right thing, but maybe they'd be more ideal for an AGM position. But at that, they probably never take it because there's an opening in the team they work for right now. Martin Madden Jr., who Quebec City native, has done a lot of work with as a scout years ago. Now he's an AGM in Anaheim, helped to build up some of the prospects they have going on there. And we all know about how the Canadians have a problem with that. But that's I don't know if Martin Madden would settle for an AGM role. I don't know if he would be the ideal fit they want in a GM role, but maybe he could be too. But I wonder if they just want somebody who doesn't necessarily have that more of that emphasis on developing prospects as their GM. You have them handle director of scouting, whatever, and as an AGM. And maybe that's an opportunity for the Canadiens to find like a Martin Madden Jr. light for that role and not necessarily him for that position.
All right, so speaking of GM, speaking of luring players or tricking players to coming to the Montreal Canadiens, I think Matt,
tricking
you have a
players. Well, what players in Canadiens history do you know have been tricked into coming to Montreal, Dave?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You got to trick them. You got to get creative, and that's why I think we're talking about the trade deadline. If you can't get them to sign, you got to trade for them and trick them into staying. So, Matt, I think you had a question about the trade deadline.
I did. I was just curious, in your opinion, what you would consider a really successful trade deadline for the Montreal Canadiens would be this year if, when they end up being sellers and they really go to this whole rebuild mentality.
They amass as many assets as they can for the players they can offload. And even if they have to retain salary on some of the worst contracts they have, I'm talking about Carey Price here, for example. Good luck getting a team to do that. But if they find a way to get like an Edmonton to take Carey Price off their hands, I consider that to be a success for this team. I understand what Carey Price means to the Montreal Canadiens organization. I understand what he means to fans across the Montreal Canadiens world, across the planet. But if the Canadiens hope to rebuild and get on with this, they have to move on from some of those old relics that have been a part of the organization and look to move forward, and also accept the fact that they're probably not going to win too many games in the foreseeable future. And a guy like Carey Price at his point in his career, I don't know what his health is like right now, and I still find it very pointless to debate whether or not when he'll be back, because we all know what he's gone through in the offseason, and he's still trying to work his way back from that, not to mention from some of the injuries he was trying to recover from in the offseason. If he's willing to play for somebody, he's proven that when he's healthy, he could be among the best in the world. And if some team is willing to take a chance on him, I think if you're the Canadiens, you have to listen to that. That is, $10.5 million is nothing to sneeze at. And if someone is willing to take some of that money off your hands, you have to listen. But him, obviously a guy like Ben Chiarot, who seems to be the top dog on the TSN trade bait board, you try to get as much as you can for him. You listen on guys like Mike Hoffman and Tyler Toffoli as well. Just assets with decent contracts who you could probably get away with not having to retain salary in any case for those two guys in particular. But yeah, just trying to max out and get as many great assets as you can back in the hopes of amassing more draft picks and more talent in the foreseeable future. That's what I think would be considered as a significant success. If we see a situation where they don't really offload anybody at the trade deadline, or they don't, it's like Ben Chiarot, like that's it. I don't know how much of a success that is.
That's fair. I think the Canadians have already proven that they're willing to move Carey Price, right? I don't think Carey Price being left unprotected, and they shot their shot there, right? They were kind of, you know, fingers crossed, Seattle picks them up. And I think that that doesn't happen without Jeff Molson's approval. So I think, in my opinion, you know, they've proven already that they're willing.
But to be fair, Carey Price does have that control, right? He's not going to just go wherever they want to trade him. He's got a no movement clause. So if they bring up teams like, hypothetically speaking, if these teams would be interested, Colorado, Washington, and Edmonton, anywhere that's close to his family and home, he might there's a chance for them to win the cup. I'd say he lifts the no movement clause to go to those teams. If it's somebody like Arizona, or, you know, it's not going to happen. He's not going to lift his no trade.
I see Carey Price more of an offseason kind of move if he's going to move. But I think Julian, you said it perfectly. Ultimately, if the only thing they're capable of doing is moving Ben Chiarot, I think it's a fail. I don't think that's a successful trade deadline. I think at least one or two other pieces have to get moved off the board. They have to get more draft picks or you know, B-plus to A-minus prospects back, something like that. But if it's just Ben Chiarot, who is pretty much a gimme at this point that he'll be moving on and netting you something fairly decent, it's not enough. I don't think it's enough. And that's what I wanted to hear. So I'm happy that you said it.
Yeah.
All right, Vito, you had a question for Julian?
Yeah, Julian, this is more for you and your career. So far, what would you say is your high point or your highlight of your career?
Other than working with me, Julian.
Other than working with Dave and knowing Dave for the last 10 years and doing your internship with him, what is the high point of your career?
Oh, man, that's a really interesting question. And you joke that, like, oh, you know, Dave, I have to say, like, getting to do that show with you on what day was it? Labor Day Monday. That was after the Asperi Kotkaniemi offer sheet. Like getting any opportunity to get. This is the first year I got to guest host shows on TSN 690. That's definitely among the high points for me. I think I've actually reached a lot of high points. It's like a tie for first in so many cases. Like I got to guest host off the cuff on TSN 690 a couple of times. It was like 1 week I did it for an entire week. And then the very next week I guest hosted lead off on the Fan 590 in Toronto, covering the Stanley Cup final. I don't know if this is going to end up being on video, but like in my glass case behind me, what I'm pointing at is my Stanley Cup final credential. Like that's something I'm going to treasure for the rest of my life. Working at the Athletic, getting the opportunity to work with them in March. And that's like my first full-time job in this industry. That's has to be up there too. Getting the opportunity to work with Chris Johnston and do shows with him twice a week, like the way that came together, like I was really excited about that. So it's hard to pinpoint one thing, but my ultimate hope is that these high points that they are right now are not high points like 20 years from now. I don't want to look at my career like next year even and be like, yeah, you know, like I peaked here and now I'm on my way down. Like that's gonna be a little depressing.
You haven't peaked yet.
Striving for high. I hope not. Like, you know, I didn't think I peaked in high school, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, okay, you know what, high school was high school. I'm gonna continue my ascension upward. There are people who peak in high school and that's it, but like I think I can fairly say I have not peaked in high school, so I hope I haven't peaked this year.
Man, you haven't peaked at all. Every time I look at you, you're doing something new. You're doing something crazy, man. Like ever since we started on the street team, internship, TSN 690, I saw you.
Those days.
You peaked right now. You got onto this podcast, man. Hey, you peaked, and you gained two more Twitter
for first.
You gained two more Twitter followers right here, man.
Wow, you weren't following him before?
I am actually following him.
Come on.
Shout out, Dan, for calling out Vito for that.
All right, we don't want to take up, you know, too much of your time.
Why? I'm not doing anything.
Well, you were making supper. What'd you make?
Funny enough, I had these like Biftek steaks that I defrosted. I was like seasoning them up and I was frying them up. And I actually was trying to clean some chicken. Actually, I had some chicken breasts and was just seasoning them up. And my sister is actually like frying a bunch right now, so I was just trying to like help her out with that. So yeah, we were making dinner.
All right, so
but no, man. I mean, like other than that, like
I'll go watch the Grey Cup after this, I guess.
Definitely. All right, Matt, let's wrap it up here.
All right. We got a little game. We did this last time for the first time. I thought it was a little bit fun, so I wanted to do it again this time with having you here. It's sort of similar if you were on the morning show on TSN 690. Star kind of has these little things that he does. So on that same ilk, I'm gonna give you two options. Details about why you're choosing one or the other, and basically answer it as fast as you can with your gut instinct is kind of what we're going for here, right? So okay. I'm going to throw it out. We're going to do the round table. We'll start with Julian. He's the man of the hour this time. He'll go first, and then we'll go maybe Vito and then Dave clockwise on my screen. And I'm just curious, maybe whatever is the most outrageous one at the end, maybe we'll touch on a bit more just to understand why you did that. But sure. Without further ado, let's dive into it. So again, I'm going to give you two options. Pick the first one, come to your mind. So you get to attend Game 7 of the Stanley Cup or the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
Vito?
Super Bowl.
I don't even think you watch football? I'm shocked. Okay. Question two.
I have not missed a single Super Bowl in like 15 years.
Okay. Question two. The Montreal Canadiens are to get the first overall pick in this upcoming draft in Montreal, or the Habs turn it around, get to the playoffs, and go on a run.
What does the run mean? What does that mean?
I can't guarantee they're going to win the Stanley Cup, but they don't just get into the playoffs and get knocked down the first round. They go on a bit of a run, and who knows what can happen.
Probably, if you're not winning the cup, there's probably no point. So first overall pick.
Okay.
Same first overall pick.
Okay.
I've already made my peace that they're going for the first overall pick. Don't do this to me, man.
Okay. This one's a little bit more long-winded, but bear with me. Either the Leafs never make it out of the first round again, ever, but every time they play the Montreal Canadiens, the Canadiens lose that game, or the Leafs will always lose every time they play the Habs, no matter what, but whenever they happen to make the playoffs, they will get past the first round.
Oh, that's weird.
I don't first know. First instinct. What do you think? What do you prefer?
Oh, man. They never get past the first round. Fine. Okay. I'll pick that one.
But that means they beat the Habs every single time they play each other. Forever.
Meaningless games. That's fine. I'll take that as well.
Okay.
Whichever one results in them losing most.
You made that pick. I thought you were going the opposite.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? Because we kind of went through it last year, I'm going to go with I never want them getting past the first round. I love the fact that I can throw it at them.
Okay. I only say that just because, like, I have nothing against the Leafs. I actually hope for the sake of some of their fans that they no longer have to suffer with a team that can't get out of the first round. I'm also tired of people who look at Kyle Dubas as this analytics computer boy and just keep downplaying him. It's just that if the Leafs get too successful, the rest of the country will never hear the end of it. So that's what you have to be careful with. Okay. So that's the only reason why there's no like hate in my heart about the Leafs or anything like that. I also understand who the SDPN is named after. So, you know, I got no smoke for my man Dangle. So yeah, nice. There's nothing about the Leafs. There's nothing about the Leafs. That's I just want. Okay.
No problem. Two more. That's it. You get to bring back the Hartford Whalers or the Atlanta Thrashers?
Oh, Atlanta Thrashers, because that means Lil Jon is going to be at games.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go with the Atlanta Thrashers as well. My boy Sean Campbell is a huge
big
Atlanta
fan.
Thrashers fan. And, you know, I think he needs a little bit of that in his life. So,
all right.
Thrashers.
I have no attachment to either, but I'll go with the Whalers.
I have a question. If you bring the Whalers back, do you bring back the mall they played in?
Yes.
Okay. Then
you get the full experience.
I totally understand why you picked the Whalers. They also have one of the best goal songs ever. So I completely understand. I'm gonna take Thrashers, but like I completely understand why you picked the Whalers. The uniforms too were also pristine.
They also used to wear pants.
More where I was going. That's it.
They wore pants, like actual Long John pants one season.
Yes.
Like, that's a look that needs to be brought back, I think.
All right, boys. Final question. Again, try to make it as gut feeling. The first thing that makes
oh, God.
Maybe the best of the bad situation. Dominic Ducharme unfortunately gets replaced next year, and one of these two gentlemen will be his replacement. It is either Tortorella or Babcock.
I think the Canadians would probably not want to have Mike Babcock as their head coach.
Probably not.
But John Tortorella might actually fit what they want to do a little bit more with the players that they have. So I think John Tortorella might actually, I guess if they want less, I mean, I think regardless, they're getting like a unilingual coach. So they're already going to get negative PR anyway. Okay. I don't know if they want to deal with the PR, the added bad PR that comes with giving a guy like Mike Babcock a chance who may not have necessarily earned it back. So I think John Tortorella would probably be the pick here.
I don't think we'll ever see Mike Babcock again. So John Tortorella.
Okay.
Man, this is bad.
Why also, if anyone tries the Michigan on the Montreal Canadiens, oh, they're getting benched.
He's going to bench. Tortorella's going to bench players anyway. I mean, you're talking about a guy who benched Dubois and Laney. He didn't care.
I mean, he had a reason for benching Dubois. I mean, maybe that last game he played.
Maybe, but like, it's not the first time we've seen or hear. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Torts because Babcock is just not happening. But you had to add a third option there, Matt. I'm sorry.
That's the whole point of this.
I needed a third option on this one.
There's vacancy. They play themselves.
Julian, I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man. Always a pleasure kicking it with you, Dave, and nice to meet you, Vito and Matt.
Nice
and,
to meet you.
Likewise.
Thanks for inviting me to get pucked.
Thanks for coming, man.
Yeah.
All right. That's the 11th episode of Get Pucked. Julian McKenzie, thank you, and we'll catch you next time. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, do whatever you guys got to do. And thanks for watching. Till next time.
Peace.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Get pucked.